Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
From Variety, celebrating more than 118 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
After Richard Jewell, I was like, yeah, it's all downhill from here. You're just starting a $40 million biopic at Warner Brothers with Clint Eastwood and Sam Rockwell and Kathy Bates. You're done. The movie didn't make any money. You failed the system. You didn't make them their money back. And that's it for you. And then Blackbird came along. And so clearly, you know, the joke's on me. The real lesson to be learned is you never peak. You're always capable of more or capable of happier.
Blackbird star Paul Walter Hauser is brutally honest about what he considers some of his most challenging moments. I'm Michael Schneider. On this episode of the award-winning Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to Paul Walter Hauser about the challenges of Blackbird, getting sober, and why he thought he peaked with Richard Jewell. But first, on a live edition of the Award Circuit Roundtable, we explain what makes this year a unique season for Emmy campaigns. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close. Hi, everyone. Oh, that,
hi.
Come on.
Hi.
There we go. So I am Variety TV editor Michael Schneider. You've been bothered with me all morning, so my apologies first off. But we do the Award Circuit Podcast, which you can download, stream, wherever you find podcasts, you know, and it's free, most of all. But not only do we have interviews with some of the biggest and brightest talent, the huge stars of Emmy and Oscar season, but every week we also do a roundtable where we discuss what's going on in all the pertinent races. And it is the four of us who get together and we chat all about the Emmy race. So we have all the answers, is basically what I'm saying. But I am joined to my left by Jazz Tanke.
Hello.
Who is our artisan's guru. I don't have your official titles in front of me, so just artisan's guru. I'm just making shit up
now. That's what it should be.
I like that title.
Yeah. So Emily Longaretta, who is our senior editor of all things published. Something like that.
Okay.
Emily does all of our Emmy issues. She puts together those beautiful, beautiful packages that you get in the mail, and she's been killing it.
Thank you.
And then there's this guy at the end. So,
I'm the vice president of janitorial services at Variety. It's a great title.
Clayton Davis, who is our superstar senior awards editor, who basically he has all the answers. He already knows who's going to win in September. So
for failure already.
He's the guy who you call up and scream at when he doesn't include your show in his predictions.
It's but all Clayton's fault.
That's him.
He always gets it right.
Always.
Always gets it right.
Great to be here and great to be with you all. I think the easiest place to start in this type of conversation is, where are we in the race and why is it so wide open this year? And that's because they changed the voting method this year, which people are not aware of. So I'm going to do a quick disclaimer of that. And then we're going to talk about our personal loves and shows and where we think things are. But
take us to school, Clayton.
Take us to school. So it used to be that as an Emmy voter, pretend you're a member of the acting peer group, you could vote for as much as you wanted in a category for nominations. It could be a participation trophy and just go down the line and vote for all 240 supporting actor submissions if you wanted. The Emmys have now decided that this isn't a participation trophy race, and now they are allowing you to vote for the number of nominations that will be allotted. So for a series, you will only get 8 checkboxes, or in lead actor or lead actress, we're expecting 6 checkboxes. So now you have to really think about what you love and vote for that. Can you vote for the same show 7 or 8 times in one category, or do you spread the wealth? So that is the big change, and what that has made us aware of. We're expecting some surprises. both in inclusions and exclusions, but we don't know what those are yet.
Well, and we should say one of the reasons why they changed it is, as you noticed the past couple of years, there was Emmys was the haves and have-nots. So there are certain shows that Emmy loved, and so every actor on the show was nominated. And then as a result, so many other shows were snubbed, as we like to use that term, snub. But this time out, the hope is that maybe people will pick maybe one favorite from a certain show, one favorite from another show, and that will have a little more diversity of choices.
There's a lot of TV, so this really gives people. I don't know if you guys know. There's a lot of TV, but I think this. I think
that's why you just look dazed right now. Just
truly, my eyes are glassed over. But I think that gives the chance to highlight some of these other shows that might not always get that. I mean, this is a chance to really spread the wealth a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at especially the large ensemble casts, we just heard from Yellow Jackets mm-hmm. have some of the best. Women, non-binary people on television that are killing it. But how do you choose a certain number of them? You know, Melanie Lynskey killed it this season. She's expected to be among the leading contenders. But what do you do with Tawny Cypress? Because she's incredible on that show. Juliette Lewis, spoiler alert, last time you can vote for her on that show. So there.
I already spoiled them. Don't worry. They already know.
You can blame Mike for that.
The internet comes hard, man, when you spoil things. So, Succession. We had our final season of Succession. We have some category switches. Kieran Culkin's going lead for the first time up against Brian Cox, who was only in 5 episodes, sort of.
Sort of.
And Jeremy Strong, who's won before. Sarah Snook is going lead for the first time. It's exciting. It's also nerve-wracking for me and us when we make rankings and choices because we don't know. And then voting starts next week, next Thursday. And then we'll know exactly what's submitted, what isn't, and who's going to be upset by those.
Whether the wealth gets spread, right?
One thing we really want to do is, aside from just talk to you guys, is we all have little personal loves and shows and things. Like, I look to Emily Longaretta for anything that's related to CSI, Law and Order, anything that's on CBS.
The Chicago shows.
Chicago shows. She really fills in the gaps for me. And those are, if you follow Mike's top 100 shows of the year, all the Emily shows are on there.
Sure.
And, yeah, so she's able to provide that. Jazz, if there's a Lady Gaga concert in contention, likely going to be there.
That's where you fall into.
Is there a Lady Gaga show in contention?
Not this year. She did not do a Tony Bennett collaboration this year. And then Mike really opens me up to some of those heartwarming shows that we come late to the party. And he's like, I was with the band way before you guys
That's
were.
That's so true.
And this year is Somebody Somewhere on HBO. If anyone can, like, talk, yes.
Yeah, Mo and Reservation Dogs, 3 shows that make me cry. Like, I've never cried so much in front of my television as I have the past couple of years. Maybe it's the pandemic. Maybe I'm just getting, I'm more of a softy in my old age.
Mike, you bring up Reservation Dogs to me and like your eyes immediately get teary.
Look. I almost teared up at the Yellow Jackets panel that I moderated right before this, just talking about that episode with
6.
The birth. Like, what is, like, I'm a mess, everyone.
Is he going to stop crying, Joe?
Right now?
I think right now. I don't even know why.
It's post-pandemic. We're just all a little more sensitive than usual. But yeah, and then for myself, I just, like, I'm always good for some raunchy comedy that you won't let your kids watch. So I'm a big
porn.
No. I mean, might as well be, because if anyone watches Dave on FX, Dave is my jam.
Dave is great.
And I love Black Lady Sketch Show. Like, I love things that will, that you
get, make you laugh.
Can't make you laugh, and you can't let your kids watch. But it's all good. But what we want to do is hear from you a little bit. And we don't typically do this. We're going to take like 1 or 2 questions from you guys if you would like to throw one out. You don't have a mic, so we're going to repeat your question into the mic so then people at home can understand what you said.
Yeah, who has a burning Emmy question? Wants to know, do you want to know why Is It Cake is not eligible this year? Which is probably the scandal of all things Emmys. You cannot vote for Is It Cake.
No Is It Cake this year. So, quickly, Is It Cake, the game show category has been moved to Primetime Emmys. They extended the eligibility window for that. Is It Cake was declared not eligible for a game show. It has to go into competition program. And competition, they did not extend the window, so it doesn't fall into the window. So it's like an orphan now in TV world. This happens a lot. There's a lot of orphan shows, and we can have a whole separate podcast about what the TV Academy needs to do to kind of like spruce up some rules. You know, scripted variety is a whole other podcast show. But yeah, that's the Is It Cake rule. And it sucks for that show because it's really good. And I always pretty much nail it. I know it's cake.
Nailed It is a different show.
Yeah, Nailed It is a different show.
we'll do an episode next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone raise your hand over here. Yeah,
was there one in the back? Right,
oh,
one.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
Let's repeat the question.
Yeah, so for people at home, from a talent agent that asked, with the strike happening, could that postpone the Emmys? The daytime Emmys have moved from their June slot to an undated slot.
And I've been talking about this a lot.
All of us are.
Yeah.
Every day.
There's a strike going on, in case anyone needs to know.
Yeah.
Writers are on strike, and SAG started negotiating today.
So there's still a lot of questions. Obviously, if SAG goes on strike, then that also changes the game. And so I think they're looking right now at all sorts of different contingencies. So clearly, if you do have both guilds on strike, then phase two kind of has to be postponed. Again, nothing official just yet, but if you don't have anyone campaigning, then I think there'll be a lot of conversations about, well, then we have to delay that second phase of campaigning. And as a result, then also push the actual Emmys to perhaps later in the year. And obviously we've seen with the daytime Emmys already being postponed, and some other award shows have been postponed as well. I could see a world where the primetime Emmys rather, don't air until, say, November. That could be 1 month that they're looking at. And there's obviously some sort of historical precedent for that. In 2001, because of 9/11, the Emmys were pushed back. And if you remember, the Emmys also took place in November that year at a different venue. So I think a lot of this is sort of wait and see right now. And I think we kind of have to wait until after the nominations come out on Wednesday, July 12th. And at that point, we'll see where is the world and do we have two guilds on strike and what happens from there. Oh. So good question. Here, I can give you my mic.
Oh, even better.
Okay. You guys are very reactive to the rules and regulations that the Academy brings to you. So if it flipped it around, if it's your choice, what suggestions would you guys make in terms of rule changes to influence and say, make it a better Emmy? What would you suggest?
So anyone hearing this at home,
do you have an hour?
We've said this so much. They said, give us 1 hour, we will fix it for so much less money and just clear it up. I mean, for me, honestly, like, and I think this is where we all agree, expand to 10. 10 dramas, 10 comedies. Yeah. There's too much TV now. Like, you can't watch everything. To assume that everyone's watching everything, you're lying to yourself. We can't even watch everything, and this is our job. So there's a lot of noise, so let's expand that. That's the easiest start point for me.
Yeah, and you would still have snubs, even if you had 10 nominees in these categories, just because there are so many shows.
Yeah, 100%. I think there would be something would need to change with the variety talk series categories that are a little
no
bit messy
intended
right now. I don't have a solution for that, to me personally, but I know as someone who covers it, I'm constantly confused as to what's going on in it, and if I'm confused, that means a lot of people are.
So my solution to that is you make it an area award, which is one where every show is eligible. They're basically all nominated because it's now such a small pool of talk shows that instead of having nominations, you just have people vote the winner from the entire pool. And that sort of leads to a more fair and balanced competition in that category, I think.
Yeah. I mean, especially this year, scripted variety, which used to be variety sketch, they felt like it needed an overhaul, which it did. But now John Oliver has been moved into that category, which will he'll compete against SNL and a Black Lady sketch show. And that doesn't make sense to me. Those aren't the same thing. And then Problem with John Stewart got kicked out of Hosted Nonfiction into talk series, which kind of makes sense. But, you know, we're weighing a desk versus not a desk. These are all things that we will have a summit about, I'm sure, in the next year.
And I think something like I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, even though it technically is in the short form categories, it should be in
It's a sketch show.
Yeah,
and it should be with the sketch. For runtime because it's 16 minutes long. So if it was 22, then it could. But then there are some things that are 5 episodes that can't compete at all because it doesn't meet the episode requirement. So you know, we're in a room full of artists and network people. You have visions for your series, visions for what you bring. And if you want it to look this way, the TV Academy, there should be a home for you somewhere. And that's, I think, what Mike was getting at.
Jazz, how about on the artisan side? What's sort of the category you think they need to change?
I would
put you on the spot.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
There's only 200 categories on the artisan side.
I'm going through every single category in my head right now. I need to think.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is makeup, because makeup is juried, but...
Yeah.
I would say all juried categories probably need to go away.
I know, right?
I think jury is, one, you can't campaign for it, and you don't know who's on the jury. So you're just going to hope the 5 people that are going to decide on this watch your... stuff.
So let's get rid of all the juried categories.
Yeah.
There you go. Fixed it.
Yeah.
I would just like to say before we wrap up that I'd be remiss if I didn't say if there's a way, I don't know if it'd be a new rule, but a way to remind people that broadcast TV is still in the game and we should still be still be supporting that and watching that.
I have a column coming up where I talk about maybe it comes down to episodic count.
Yeah.
So maybe there should be a category for shows that do more than 16 episodes.
24 episodes. These people are putting in the work. Let's give them some payoff.
Emily is such a champion of broadcast television.
She just wants Law and Order to have its own category. This is all a scheme.
Who doesn't?
All y'all right? are falling for it. She just wants a place for
outstanding Dick Wolf drama.
Yeah. 9 hours of watching Dick Wolf category off. Okay, 9 hours a week. That's a commitment, guys.
I mean, the thing is, Dick Wolf has 37 shows, so he would be able to sustain an entire category all to himself.
Yeah, it works. It all works. But just I think to wrap up here, when it comes to Emmys, like Mike says, we know the answers. We really don't, because there's 20,000 people that are voting. It's so hard to get a read on it. But the most important thing that you all need to know, if you're a voter and you're listening at home, is watch as much TV as you can. It's hard to watch it all, but give everything a shot, especially something that you've never heard of. Like, just go for it. It will blow your mind.
Yeah, especially this little show called Succession. Have you heard about it?
It's a big breakout this year, that Succession show. It's going to do really well.
Yeah.
Apparently somebody dies in that show.
We'll see how it does, but that'll be the one to watch. Anything else before we wrap that you guys are excited to see when nominations come out?
I'm a big fan of Shrinking, and particularly Jessica Williams.
Yes.
I think she is the great performance of the comedy categories this year. I'm excited for her. And Latinos to be nominated at the Emmys. It's going to be also a very big moment. Looking forward to it.
That would be nice.
So I have 2. I do love Yellow Jackets. I think I would love to see Simone Cassell be nominated for AAPI representation, to your point. But... this is going to help with Ben Whishaw. He won the BAFTA. It was nominated for Critics' Choice. That's the one show.
This is going to hurt.
Yes.
Emily, how about you?
I feel like I've pretty much already said all my love, but I would say I really hope that we get a little bit more love for Abbott this year. I think that's something we got a taste of it last year, and I think this could be the year we get even more.
And I will end it with just this one plea. Better Call Saul has never gotten an Emmy.
46 nominations.
It's actually insane.
0 wins.
How?
What's going on?
It's the last time.
It's the last chance. So there you go. I mean, there's so many great shows. It's an exciting year. I mean, there's a lot going on. I know it's a troubled time in this industry, but the Emmys are all about celebrating the best, including the writing, the directing, the acting, the crews, the artisans, everyone. This is a time to celebrate just how great entertainment has been. And coming out of the pandemic, the fact that some of the best television ever has been produced in the last year just tells you everything you need to know about the resiliency of this industry, and excited to see more. Don't forget to download or stream our podcast, Award Circuit Podcast, again on Apple, on Stitcher. What is
Spotify.
Stitcher?
Wherever
Spotify.
You wherever you podcast.
Wherever right? you get your podcasts. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
You, have a great everybody. Rest of your day. After the break, Blackbird star Paul Walter Hauser. From Los Angeles, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
And we're back. It's the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. I'm Michael Schneider. In Apple TV Plus's Blackbird, Paul Walter Hauser stars as serial killer Larry Hall, opposite Taron Egerton, who plays James Keene, a man offered a commuted sentence if he can extract a confession out of Hall. Dennis Lehane, known for his best-selling mysteries, adapted Keene's autobiographical novel In With the Devil, a fallen hero, a serial killer, and a dangerous bargain for redemption, for the 6-part series.
When it's quiet like this, they call it riot quiet, like the calm before a storm.
Really?
Yeah. Or it just means it's quiet. Did you see anyone in here?
No. Something missing?
Why would something be missing?
But if I was worried someone had been in my spot, I'd worry someone took something.
I'm not worried. Someone was in my spot.
No?
Oh, no.
Then why'd you ask if I saw someone in there?
Hauser has already netted a SAG Award nomination and wins from the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice Awards for Blackbird. Variety's Janelle Riley recently spoke to Hauser about some of the challenges he faced before his recent streak of successes, including getting sober and also seeking treatment for his depression and anxiety. Now, he and his wife recently welcomed a second son, and his career is thriving. He'll be seen in season 2 of Apple TV Plus's The After Party, hitting the streamer in June. In addition, his new film Americana, in which he stars opposite Sydney Sweeney, just played the South by Southwest Film Festival. And he recently shot The Instigators with Casey Affleck and Matt Damon. And could his fan favorite character, Stingray, return for the final season of Cobra Kai? They began with Janelle handing the actor a burger, and you'll find out why in a moment.
I'm going to take down a bite of this burger. I took off one of the buns. That's good enough for me right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit the treadmill later. Here we go.
Oh, wow. You got the audio and everything. Good? Okay.
Okay. I'll tell you what's really good about this burger. It's straight.
Bingo.
It doesn't try to achieve, you know, it's not trying to end up in Buckingham Palace. It just wants two beds and a bath, you know. This is good. This is a good burger.
Can I tell you where it's from?
Where?
A gas station. Now, don't worry. It's not.
So I was onto something with saying it was humble but good?
Yes. It's literally this gas station on the corner of Sepulveda and Santa Monica. It's a deli. It's not just like a gas station. Like they
You're
have,
like, I found it on the floor. Yeah, I wrestled literally it on out the of corner. The hands of a vagrant. Yeah.
No, it's called the Corner Deli and Grill.
Okay.
And everybody in this building just goes there because the food is cheap and good and solid. And it's one of the best burgers I've ever had. And nobody believes me because they're like, it's inside a gas station. No, this is a great deli. They have the best BLT I've ever had. And I'm not – I have no endorsement deal from them. I'm just telling you that I sing the praises of this solid, solid burger.
You can find good stuff anywhere.
Right?
That's what's fun about a big city too. When you visit – I visited, you know, London, Pittsburgh, New York. Some of the best places are just – they're not on the travel list on the internet.
Yep.
Yeah, you got to find it.
Anyway, we have this burger here because you've been seen around award shows, always having one. I think you proposed to Jamie Lee Curtis with one.
I proposed a burger to her, absolutely. I told her I was like, we're in a group text or something and just being silly. And I told her I was making a smash burger in my home, which I've come to know is like my favorite thing in the world now. Is smash burgers because they're thin, so you feel like you're being vaguely healthy, but you're not. You're just smashing the patty thin and then adding another patty because it's too thin for you. Anyway, the things we justify. But she said, you better bring me one of those to the Golden Globes. I almost made her one. Then I'm like, you know, it could get on my clothes, the grease and the messiness, and maybe she'll think it's weird. I'm not going to bring it. Then I run into her on the red carpet, and the first thing she says, where's my smash burger? And we get it on camera where she's with Entertainment Tonight or whatever. And she goes, oh, and like acted really upset about it, jokingly, obviously. And so I brought her one to the Critics' Choice, and she wasn't there.
Oh, no.
She had COVID.
That's right. She got COVID.
So I had it on stage, and I just looked like a weirdo like I always do. And then I finally brought her one at the – I think it was the AARP Awards, and she got down on one knee, and Mark Malkin caught it. And
Variety's Mark Malkin.
Yeah, love him. And, yeah, that's been my thing, and now I just kept bringing them. I brought, like, 20 Smash Burgers to the SAG Awards, and I was just handing them out to, like, Sandler – and Jamie and whoever wanted one. Because, you know, they don't feed you with those things.
They did this year, but it was – they took it away pretty quickly. So by the time most people sat down, the food was gone.
I mean, sometimes it's good, but it's usually like, would you like the arugula or the arugula? And you're like, no.
Or the diet arugula.
Yes.
I did. There were some left over. I think you got them from In-N-Out. I stole one off the table.
Oh, you did?
The end of the
good.
Night. Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
No, they were from someplace, I think it's called Top Burger or something. But
no way. I thought they were total In-N-Out packaging.
I wish. Maybe I could get a branding deal.
Yeah. Where is the best smash burger?
The best smash burger in Los Angeles. You know, I don't know. I'm kind of proud of the one I made in my kitchen. Like, I use a little Worcestershire, a little some grilled onions well done, double cheese, American.
Do you pad out the meat with, like, bread or anything, or is it just straight meat?
You know, we all like bread with our burgers, but lately my move has been doing burger bowls.
What is that? Oh, with the lettuce?
Yeah, you just throw it on a bed of lettuce and then you feel less guilty. Cut some carbs.
Yeah, and then you can have twice as much meat because you're being so good. Yeah.
You'll feel like Arby's. You have the meat.
So just to set the record straight, because when they announced your nomination, where they're going through the nominees for the SAG Awards, they cut to you and you perfectly timed a shot of yourself eating
I tried
burger.
To. I was doing the comedic timing thing where I'm like, wait till they cut to you and then act like you're watching the actor like you're not him. And you're just like
flawless. Flawless. But you're so good that some people really thought you didn't know the camera was on you.
Yeah. I noticed people on the internet were like, oh my gosh, that's so embarrassing. I'm just like, guys, I'm a walking embarrassment. I was trying to have fun. I made Sandler laugh. That's all that mattered to me. Sandler was pointing at me, and I was like, is he pointing at me? And he was like, that thing you did with the burger, that was hilarious. And I was like, oh, man.
It's a good Sandler.
I got the Sandman to laugh. That's a win.
Yes, my friends in my burger group were very excited, and they were like, he's the winner of the night. He's in burger bliss.
Oh, that's sweet of them. I need to join that group sometime before we all...
You can get a t-shirt.
Pass on. That t-shirt's amazing.
Yeah.
I just like having fun at those things. I think, you know, they can get a little... I can get a little stuffy. People are trying to save the world with an acceptance speech, and you know, it's just a lot of things. So I was sitting at a table with John Krasinski and Emily Blunt at the SAG Awards, and Fran Drescher's on stage, and she's like, SAG-AFTRA is committed to, and then she said some statistic about getting rid of plastics on sets, which, by the way, I'm all for. I think it's, you know, ridiculous. We have so many other resources outside of plastic for toys and disposable products, whatever. But she was saying it and everybody clapped like, yeah, look at us. We're saving the world with the plastics. And I just yell in the middle of the applause. I go, fuck plastic. And just started clapping super hard. And I made Krasinski roll in the aisles. I was very happy.
Oh my God.
I'm just trying to make people laugh. That's all that is.
It's funny because I've been seeing you do dramatic roles for years, but I think most people associate you with comedy until Blackbird, which is about as far from a comedy as you can get. Although there's some dark humor in it, I will say.
Denzel Haynes is a funny guy.
Yeah.
You know, make no mistake, don't get it twisted. He is a legitimately very funny man. And I think he knew that I had a comedy background and that I could handle some of that and bring sort of a surprising amount of comedy, but really on the page, you know, there's that brilliant part where Taryn's character, Jimmy, says to my character, Larry, he goes, I peaked in high school. And then I respond with, I peaked in the womb. You know, that would be a great one-liner for Rodney Dangerfield or somebody, you know?
Yeah. But it's also kind of true in a sad way.
Yeah.
Of the character, yeah.
We all have moments of feeling like that, too. I have to imagine. I mean, after Richard Jewell, I was like, yeah, it's all downhill from here. You're just starting a $40 million biopic at Warner Brothers with Clint Eastwood and Sam Rockwell and Kathy Bates. You're done. The movie didn't make any money. You failed the system. You didn't make them their money back. And that's it for you. And then Blackbird came along. And so clearly, you know, the joke's on me. The real lesson to be learned is you never peak. You're always capable of more or capable of happier. Sometimes happier isn't more. Those two are not, you know, they're not the synonyms for one another.
But I feel like
we mistake it as such.
Richard Jewell will stand the test of time. And I feel like, you know, a year after that movie came out, people were still talking about it. And just even if they were just seeing it now on home video,
sure.
It came out at a very strange time, too. So I have to imagine.
You know, sometimes I'll find out, oh, it just hit net. I'll get a residual for, you know, $800, Richard Jewell. You're like, hell yeah. And I'll realize, oh, it's on Netflix in Canada. So now a ton of Canadian people are seeing it. Or you find out it's on ITV over in Britain, you know, whatever the thing is, it does make the rounds. And, you know, Clint Eastwood is just, he's a brand as big as, you know, Pepsi and Adidas. Mm-hmm. He has a brand and people go to that brand for their fix. And I think that'll be a movie like all of his that just gets discovered with new generations and new folks.
Did you really think it was over? Did you think like I blew my shot or were you?
Oh, I didn't think I wouldn't work. Cause I mean, even if I was relegated to just doing a 3-camera sitcom laugh track on the guy with donut crumbs on his chest, you know, I can still do that till I'm dead. But, I do aspire to be like, not spoken in the same sense. I mean, spoken is more ego. Like is more I'm doing the work of people like everyone from Ned Beatty to Paul Giamatti to Philip Seymour Hoffman, these sort of misshapen character actor guys who handle comedy and drama with equanimity. That's very important to me.
People like love your characters so much, even when they're like not good guys. Like,
oh, I know, isn't that weird? I was getting some compliments for Blackbird or Black Klansman.
Yeah.
People were like, I kind of like that guy. I'm like, are you racist? And but what they're really getting at psychologically is, oh, that could be a great guy in another life. Meaning, had he not grown up in a racist family in Colorado and he was born to some more liberal to median moderate family in Seattle. That guy's a whole bunch of fun. He's a PE teacher that you invite to every cookout. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm curious if...
Sorry.
Oh, no, of course. I'm curious if after Blackbird, because I have this vision in my head that like people are constantly approaching you and wanting to talk about Stingray or wanting to talk about Cruella and all these fun characters. Did you notice a change when Blackbird came out? Like people kept their distance or were maybe a little more cautious around you?
Weirdly enough, people were not reticent or distant. It was actually – it was more like they still approached me with comfortability, but it was a different tone. So it used to be more like – people would approach me and be like, dude, you're such a clown. We love you. You're such a ham. And now I have some people walking up to me, like a 40-year-old couple in an airport, and they'll be like, hey, my husband and I just watched Blackbird last weekend with his parents. And we're in awe of what you do. And, you know, can I shake your hand? Can I get a selfie? Whatever. So it's just that has been fun. Not that my ego needs it. It's more just a validation of like, hey, I'm doing the work that's affecting people the way the work affects me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some actors like Stephen Graham in Boiling Point, Mads Mikkelsen in Another Round, Mahershala Ali in Anything. These guys are affecting me, and I think about them often. So, you know, the hope is that I do the kind of work that stays with people, and they speak of it in the same light and try to share those stories with other people.
Did you know the story of Blackbird at all? Were you familiar with Larry Hall? I'd never heard – not that I – well, actually, I do go down rabbit holes about serial killers sometimes late at night. Listen, but I was shocked. I never heard the story.
We've all done the dark rabbit hole on the phone or the computer. I was not familiar at all. I'm buddies with Bill Burr. He did a whole podcast episode on the Larry Hall incident, which surprised me. I didn't realize how many people knew about it, but it was foreign to me. And, you know, when you think about maybe playing a serial killer someday, my assumption was that I would get cast as, I almost said John Wayne Bobbitt. John Bobbitt is the guy who got his wiener ripped off. John Wayne Gacy.
Yes.
Because I have a larger frame and I don't look unlike him, though I like to think I got a little more teddy than grizzly on my bear. But I thought maybe someone would try to cast me as him. And I never wanted to do that role because I felt like people would always want to see the grisly nature of it, more mm-hmm. of the Dahmer approach where you're living in the moment and you're sweating through each second like the victim. And that can be great entertainment. But I like the more psychological, character-driven chess game going on in a Blackbird.
Yeah.
You know, that's to me, that'll always be the more interesting version, I suppose.
Especially when you're playing chess with Taron Egerton.
Dude, great chess player. So is Dennis Lehane. Like, so are our three directors. Yeah, oh, Joe Chappelle and Jim McKay and Michael Roskam. We don't talk about them enough. But those men and their DP, Natalie Kingston, they really set a tone for mm-hmm. we're making this thing look like a prestige movie. And you pair that with that cast and you know, it took very little. People are like, were you afraid to sign on board to this project? I'm like, dude, Dennis Lehane, Taron Egerton, I don't know that you need to say anything else other than am I being paid and will I be housed during the production? I think those guys are top of the line.
At the same time, once you did sign on to do it, was it a difficult place to exist in? Because I would think just watching the show can be rough.
Yeah, I was in it. I've been very open about my wife and I did a podcast on this other podcast called Dad Tired, which now that I have a second child, I really appreciate the title of that podcast. My wife and I did a whole thing about just the breakdown of our marriage and what we were going through at the time. I was dealing with some addiction, not like crazy. I'm taking pills and crashing cars, but definitely a lot of marijuana and alcohol and just crashing my life with depression and bad choices. So I was in a dark place when I was making Blackbird. And afterwards or during and afterwards, I was like, I think I got to get sober. So I got sober and got into therapy and got like a full-time therapist, and I got on Zoloft and Trazodone for my sleep and depression and anxiety. And I just started feeling so much better.
Yeah.
And Dennis and a few people from the production pulled me aside at different points where they're like, hey, it's good to see you doing well. And I'm like, was I doing that bad in your eyes? And they were kind of like tiptoey, not wanting to offend me, but they're like, you treated us well, but I'm not sure you treated yourself well.
Wow.
And they were kind of hinting at like, I don't think you know how dark you got. I don't think you realized how much the show affected you, which, you know, hindsight is a bit of a teacher in that. And I've been looking at where I was at and, you know, I want to own it. I'm the type of guy, you know, I did this guest star on the show Bupkis.
Yeah.
For Pete Davidson. And I only have like two scenes in the show. It's not a big thing. And I'm just there to help Pete because I love Pete and he's a mensch. But I, you know, it's like, what can I do in these two scenes? And in one of the scenes I did with him and Colson Baker was I put a cigarette out on my face and I like wrote a monologue that I just then kind of improvised and blurted out in a scene and they kept it in the show. It's me like writing a letter to my son from the past when I wasn't sober. And apologizing that I missed his birth. Like, I just went, I'm basically the kind of guy who's like, I know this is an appetizer, but I'm trying to give you a meal.
Yeah.
And then you can parcel it out. You can take that home. You can give the rest of the meal, the rest of the app to a homeless guy. You can throw it in the trash. But I'm always trying to give a meal for the appetizer. So when I have a meal like Blackbird, I'm trying to give you a buffet and trying to over deliver. And that, I don't think I realize that can hurt over time. That can wear you out.
Did you get sober during Blackbird?
Sorry. I'm fighting a cold, my little guy.
Of course, well, yeah.
My son Harris has a little newborn. Bit of a cold. What, say it again? Sorry.
Did you get sober during Blackbird?
During, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was California sober, though. I was doing the thing where I'm like, I'm sober.
Yeah.
But I was still taking edibles, and I just wasn't drinking. I haven't had a drink since July 26 of 2021, I think, but... But yeah, on my day 89, where I was counting my days and feeling good about myself, before I hit day 90, I'm like, I have to get serious. And I had a good cry and I was like, yeah. I have to say goodbye to this. And so my sort of sober birthday thing is October 26th of 2021.
That's so interesting because I don't think – it wouldn't surprise me as much if it happened after Blackbird. But it must have been hard being in the midst of all
this. I had one scary moment where I – I was in a bit of a rage and I like broke my laptop and I had been drinking and I left the house and didn't tell my assistant where I was going. I kind of scared him and it was like an ugly, sad little moment that many a man has had. I'm not the first to have that moment. But it scared me enough to go, oh, I don't want something bad to happen to me. I care about my kid and I care about my loved ones. I care about me, even though I'm still learning how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to go on the self. Me and I'm buddies with Zach Levi, and he and I talk about self love and self care and our faith and stuff all the time. And it's something I don't think enough people talk about. I'm not trying to hang some sort of look at me tassel down my cheek or something. I'm just making the point of it's easy to talk about the good stuff. Yeah. I can tell you about getting sloshed with Sam Rockwell. It was fun. There are all these stories that are fun and I like telling them, but in the time I have, I always want to try to be vulnerable and show a little skin because I think people need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So I have to be sober because I'm actually allergic to alcohol. Wow. You know what I love about it?
Eternal DD.
Yeah. I think it's an Asian thing because my mom has the same issue. You know what I love about it? I save so much money.
Oh,
alcohol
sure.
Alcohol is expensive.
Oh, also, it gets worse if you love it. Because then you're not going to go buy a thing at Cuervo. You're trying to graduate and you're getting, oh, this is actually from Mexico City. And it came with a decorative ribbon on it. And it was $192. I mean, that is, there is a leveling up in the alcohol game and weed game that just, it can be fun for a minute. And then you realize, like, what the hell am I doing?
Do you remember like where you were in the shooting of Blackbird when you got sober? Like the specific scenes or
where was I? I think it was episode. Oh, you know what? Part of it too is I was forgetting some of my lines, which is that is not a Paul thing. Yeah. I do not do that often. I'm very good about keeping to task and showing up for everybody. But this episode 4, where we're cleaning up the cafeteria, which is all I'll say to not give anything away, but the cleaning the cafeteria episode 4 thing, that was a lot of dialogue for anybody. And I'm doing very specific things. I'm not just rattling off. It's like I have to have an emotional journey while saying each thing. So that was tough to begin with, but I remember my assistant, this really sweet guy, Anthony Pettix. He worked on staff at the Goldbergs on ABC for a while, and he's a musician and a writer friend of mine. He kept having to tell me really simple fixes. And at one point he said to me, he's like, Paul, you know, Dennis loves your work. We're already in an episode 4. Like, you don't need it word perfect. And I was kind of like, no, but it should be because his writing's so good. Mm-hmm. And that's on me. So I got frustrated with myself. And I told Anthony, I think it was a Thursday. I said, on Saturday, I want you throwing out my bar cart. I bought like a $300-$400 bar cart for my Airbnb. And I thought it was so fancy. I had my, 35-year Macallan or whatever it was. I had all my fancy crap. And I told Anthony, who has experience with knowing people who have dealt with addiction, I said to him on a Thursday, make sure by Saturday I want that thrown out. And what I was really saying unconsciously is I need one more day.
Yes, of course.
To tie one off. And true to form, Anthony being a good friend and good assistant, the next morning I woke up and the bar cart was gone.
Wow.
He had thrown everything out. He defied my Saturday deadline.
Well, you did say by Saturday.
Oh, I said on Saturday.
Oh, you said on Saturday. Okay.
I said on Saturday for sure. And he said, nope, you're full of shit. And he's right. I was full of shit.
I am curious, what do you have coming up next? Because I know you're doing the second season of The After Party, which I hear is amazing.
Yeah, we shot it. I'm about to drop the little teaser trailer thing on my Instagram today. We just saw it's... It's so fun. Yeah. I think it's just going to be a fun summer watch, and everybody's going to want to kick back and have a laugh. The cast is insane.
Someone working behind the scenes told me that you steal it.
Really?
Yes. Without even me asking about you, they just said completely independently, they were like, wait until you see Paul Walter Hauser.
Cuff me. I love theft in all its forms. No, I had a blast. And, I really just got to improvise and play too. Chris Miller is one of those guys who goes, hey, Paul, I know who you are and what you do. Let's just have fun. When people cuff me, it's like you got to have the love there. Mm-hmm. Got to have the mutual trust. That's such a big deal. I mean, I would not be so hellbent on improv-y stuff if I hadn't gotten the sign off from guys like Spike and Craig Gillespie and Clint. Like, yeah. Now I'm doing this Doug Liman movie with Matt Damon and Casey Affleck. It's called Instigators. It's Doug, Casey, Matt, Hong Chow. I think I got a scene or two with Alfred Molina. Like, it's an amazing little group of killer actors. And once again, I've never worked with Doug Liman. I don't know how he works. But by take two, he's like, hey, say something else when you walk in the room. Doesn't tell me what to say. And I'm like, oh, okay, we know what's going on here. And then the fun is just trying to make Matt and Casey break or saying something unexpected and getting to play with those guys.
I don't know if you can say or not. Are you back for the new season of Cobra Kai?
I'll be very transparent. They haven't reached out yet. And I think they know that the stakes are so high with the show coming to an end. They know that the stakes are so high, and I think they might be doing more than 10 episodes. I don't know how many episodes they're going to do. It could be 10, it could be 15, it could be 20. So I'm just waiting for them to hit me up and be like, hey, do you want to come play? And hopefully it works out with my schedule. Yeah. I love those guys.
That's Paul Walter Hauser. You can catch Blackbird, now streaming on Apple TV+. That's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Zach Levin edited this episode and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest awards predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Emily Longaretta, and Clayton Davis, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.